Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 54 of Dogcast Radio. In this show, we have an interview about a realistic dog book.
Dogs are gross, you know, and we have to be prepared to live with that. I like to write about the gross things, I can't help it.
Bernard Cartwright reads more of the Knock Nobbler.
One day, while driving down a country lane, I pulled up very sharply in front of a moth-eaten whippet, which looked like a starving fox, just standing there alone in the middle of the road.
And we have the Dogcast Radio News.
News this time of dangers and opportunities for dogs around the world.
But before all that, let's get a bit hands-on. Whenever I have had a massage, I feel wonderful afterwards, and it's something our dogs can benefit from too. To find out more, I spoke to Lynn Vaughan about her DVD, Bodywork for Dogs, Intuitive Touch Through Massage, Acupressure and Awareness.
Well, it's a synergy of techniques, including some massage techniques, a simple collection of acupressure points, and awareness techniques. And it's the combination of the three of those that makes the video unique.
Mm-hmm. So it sort of helps dog owners use these techniques with their own dog?
Yes, it is. It is designed so that it's very easy to use and specifically for people to use with their own dogs, as opposed to a teaching manual for veterinary students. However, it is used in veterinary training, believe it or not, and also for training professional massage therapists who are working with animals, along with the general public. So it's very, very simple and straightforward, but highly effective.
So excellent. That's
what makes it applicable to all of those groups of professionals and the general public. It's very, very easy to follow.
Yeah. So tell me about, you know, why should I use massage with my dog? What benefits are there for the dog?
Well, it's a wonderful way for you to learn a little bit more about your dog's body.
Mm-hmm.
It really sets up a whole different understanding of their body. And it's a great way of increasing their general health. I mean, all the systems of their body are affected with massage and improved. You know, their circulatory system, their respiratory system, their digestive, nervous, lymphatic systems. Everything is improved with massage. And that's just for, you know, a generally healthy dog. And there are also great preventive benefits to massage and acupressure. And then also with dogs who have illnesses, as long as the people consult with their veterinarian ahead of time and make sure that massage and acupressure is appropriate for their dog, massage can be extremely helpful for a number of diseases, a number of illnesses, a number of injuries, post-surgery, many, many ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's also extremely helpful for athletic dogs.
Yeah.
You know, and any dogs who are doing great, you know, physical exertion, whether they are in competition or, you know, any other way, service dogs, therapy dogs. I use this same technique grew out of my teaching with Guiding Eyes for the Blind, which is a school that is training dogs as guide dogs and matching them up with their people. And I've taught there for many, many years. And that's really where this technique all evolved.
Mm-hmm. So basically, whether your dog is healthy or has a problem, you know, it's going to benefit him.
Absolutely. If your dog has a problem, again, you want to consult with your veterinarian up front and make sure it's appropriate, because there are certain conditions it's not appropriate for, or it can be used, but within certain boundaries where there might be certain contraindications that you wouldn't use. For instance, some of the stretching techniques maybe, or, some of the acupressure points might not be helpful. But your holistic veterinarian would be well-versed enough to know what techniques to steer away from and what to use.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's really applies to many, many dogs.
Yeah, yeah. Now I'm just
and we also use it a lot for behavioral for issues also. Yeah. So it's a wonderful way of communicating with your dog in different ways.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, whenever I've had a massage, you know, I've come out feeling just so relaxed and mellow, and all my joints, you know, seem to work much better than they have before. Do you kind of see that that sort of reaction from the dogs?
Oh, yes. They are asleep, blissfully asleep by the end of the session. Yeah. And in the beginning, you know, sometimes it takes some getting used to for them. But if it's done, you know, if it's done in the right way and just in gradual steps, eventually the dogs absolutely adore it. And best to do when they're not going to have any work to do afterwards.
Yes. So they can just relax there.
Exactly.
I mean, I suppose, you know, you must concentrate your attention on the dog to massage them. And they love that, don't they?
They do. And a lot of one of the techniques we work with in the video is called breath work. And it's connecting with your dog through breathing. And they know right away when you're breathing with them. That's one of the loveliest ways to connect with them up front. And then it also provides a lot of relaxation for the person giving the massage also, not just for the dog. Yeah, and there's some great studies going on that they're showing immune-boosting benefits of giving a massage also.
Oh, wow, that's excellent.
Yeah,
So now, can this work with sort of any size of dog as well?
Any size of dog. The video uses a dog for the demonstration of a 20-minute session on one side of the body, and the dog is approximately 50 pounds. So if you're using the video to massage a smaller or larger dog, you just would adapt what you're doing to the size of your dog and the length of time you would use it. We give an explanation of the techniques up front. We give little samples of each technique so people can see them ahead of time and practice them ahead of time if they'd like. And then there's this 20-minute session that you can follow along with your own dog.
That sounds really, really good, yeah. So can you give me an example of sort of what's a simple sort of, you know, exercise, whether it's massage or acupressure or, you know, wherever it is, from the video? If I've never done this before, what's a really simple way to start this?
A very simple way to start this is just by doing some slow, deep breathing of your own, just to get yourself centered and quieted down, get your mind quiet, because when your mind is quiet, you can listen to your dog much better. And that's a lot of what massage is about. It's about listening to your dog, whether it's through your hands or through your awareness. And then your dog realizes that you've settled into this state, and then you would, a simple thing to start with could be just stroking. And most dogs really love fingertip stroking. Done very, very lightly, just as it sounds like, with your fingertips all over their bodies. Or if you just know that there's one place that your dog really loves, like having their chest stroked or around the base of their ears, those are two places that are commonly loved by dogs. You can just start with those and just have a short, positive experience with doing that. And then next time you add on a little bit more. You know, each time you add on a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah. While you were saying that, I'm just thinking, we do actually sort of, we touch our dogs an awful lot, don't we? And this is just, I suppose, quite, you know, it can be quite a natural continuation of that.
It is, and it's done in a more focused way. We touch our dogs, I think, a lot, and especially, you know, petting and so on. But when you're massaging, there's much more of a focus and much more of an awareness of what's underneath your hands. One of the things that we show on the video, Bodywork for Dogs, is a simple anatomy. It shows the structure of the dog. So you see where certain bones are, the way their neck vertebra lie, their spine, the way their pelvis is set up, so that when you're stroking your dog, you can imagine what your hand is stroking over, you know, what bone it is you're going over, what joint it is you're going over, where the more muscled areas are. And that's what allows you to start listening a little bit better.
Now, one of the things you mentioned is sort of how you can use massage with elderly dogs.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, for example, we've just adopted a retired guide dog, and his hips mm-hmm. are a little, they're a little bit stiff, and he has difficulty standing for long periods. He can run and gallop round, but mm-hmm. if he has to stand, he's a little bit weak on his back, on his hips. So what kind of thing, you know, how does it benefit, you know, the elderly animals like that? What can I do with him?
I'm assuming he's been checked over by a veterinarian.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. And hopefully your vet has been able to assess levels of arthritis and where some of the more predominant areas are, whether it's his hips or his spine. Mm-hmm. And you do, with older dogs, you also want to rule out that there aren't any bony spurs involved mm-hmm. of the spine. That's why I say, you know, it is important to get a very clear veterinary diagnosis
yeah.
before you start, because areas of pain that you might find when you're massaging might be related to, you know, a bony spur or a disc problem. And you just want to be clear on that before you start. But in general, one of the best things that massage does is it increases circulation. So when you get a greater blood flow going in the body, you get more oxygen and nutrients going to all the different areas you're massaging, and then the toxins that are released get flushed out. And that in and of itself really makes dogs feel a lot better, and it's extremely helpful for their overall health. And then as far as the joints are concerned, you're bringing extra blood flow to the joints themselves, which is extremely helpful. And it also relaxes the muscles and ligaments around the joints. And this dog sounds like he is... Is it a male?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, he probably has needed to compensate in other parts of his body
yeah.
for where he's becoming weaker.
Mm.
So those areas that are tightening up and helping him, you know, solidify his stance because he's weaker in his hips, those areas should very definitely be worked on and relaxed a little bit so that they don't get too overly tight.
Yes, yeah. It's interesting yeah. It's interesting you say that, actually, because when we first had him, and he'd done more walking, obviously, than running, his shoulders were very prominent. And since we've had him, his shoulders have slimmed down, you know, and I think his hips have become a little better.
He's not pulling on a harness either.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but it's always lovely to hear about a technique that you can use to, you know, enhance your dog's quality of life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I work with so many elderly dogs, and it is such a rewarding thing to do with them. The area that is just between their very last rib and their hind leg, which is their loin area, that area typically is where many elderly dogs will start to compensate and tighten up there for a weaker hind end. And massaging just that area can just give them so much relief and so much additional flexibility.
Let's look at the other end of life with a puppy. You know, are there specific benefits for a puppy with massage?
Well, that's interesting you ask that. There are so many benefits, and I'm just finishing up a protocol Four Guiding Eyes for the Blind, the same organization that raises their own puppies to become guide dogs.
Mm.
And this protocol is for massage and acupressure from the time they're born through their puppyhood.
Oh, wow.
And we literally start off from the time they're born with gentle stroking all over their bodies. And it helps their general health and their nervous system development.
That's incredible.
Yeah, so it also helps them, you know, bond with people, gives them greater confidence with having their bodies handled, and especially because, you know, with their job in life, they're going to need to be handled quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And with any puppy, whether they're going to be a guide dog or not, you know, they're going to need to have simple procedures done in their lives, like having their nails trimmed and, you know, ears examined and eyes and so on. And it starts them right off with a lovely, positive association with being handled.
Yes, yeah. It sounds like it, you know, it's a wonderful technique, as you say, that you can, there's physical and mental and emotional benefits for you and the dog, which is wonderful.
Okay.
And it's really going to increase that bond between you, isn't it?
Oh, yes. That's a whole other level besides just the physical benefits of it. It really, as I said, it just sets up a whole other way of communicating and understanding your dog. And they really know that you're doing this.
Mm.
And you learn a lot about them, especially when you learn to listen to them a little bit more. They tell you a lot of things about themselves.
Yeah, yeah. If people want to, and I'm sure they will, sort of want to find out more or order a copy of the DVD, where can they do that?
Well, they can go to our website, which is www.animalshealing.com.
Mm-hmm.
So that's animals, A-N-I-M-A-L-S-H-E-A-L-I-N-G.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also sold through companies like Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm.
And we ship all over the world, so it's not an issue that we're in America.
So wherever you live, you and your dog can discover the benefits of massage. And if you massage your keyboard, you can click on the links on the Dogcast Radio site to find out more about Lynn at her website. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Nick.
And I'm Kate. News this time of dangers and opportunities for dogs around the world. Dogs living in Florida, USA, have suffered coyote attacks in the past, but now there is a new threat to them. Hawks. Obviously, it is smaller dogs that are most at risk from hawk attacks, and there are reports of small dogs being taken, while others have been picked up and then dropped by the birds.
Meanwhile, some dogs around the world have been falling prey to another danger, black dog syndrome. This is where black dogs, who end up in rescue, have great difficulty finding a new family to love them. If you search on the internet on black dog syndrome, you can find many websites on the subject. The site, blackpearldogs.com, says, "Black dogs, particularly black labs or lab mixes, are euthanized at a horrifying rate at many pounds and shelters because people pass them up for lighter colored dogs. Apparently, black dogs are perceived as aggressive, have a bad public image, or just don't photograph well."
Well, if Dogcast Buddy is anything to go by, black dogs can make some of the most loving pets around, so please do give them a chance. And talking of dogs that need a chance, around 1,000 dogs have been rescued from a puppy mill in Virginia in the US. That's double the amount of animals the establishment had a permit for. The Humane Society took over 600 breeding females, around 300 puppies, and 70 male dogs. The rescued dogs have been distributed to shelters around America.
Let's hope they all find loving new homes, whatever colour they are. And one dog that already has a loving home, and lots of attention, is Mr. Harve. The 3-year-old Labrador Golden Retriever mix works at Freedom Middle School in Orlando, Florida, and lives with teacher Cindy Frongello. Harve has counselled students in many ways. They can visit him to share a secret, have a moan, or a good cry on his furry shoulder. The great thing about Harve is that, like all dogs, he's a superb listener, he doesn't argue, and he never judges. Harve also picks up quickly on body language, tone of voice, and other subtle cues, and has helped pupils and teachers deal with the stress of bullying, anger, and bereavement.
And in Wolf Lake Elementary School, in Apopka, also Florida, Lou II is hard at work comforting and building confidence amongst children. Lou II was placed by Canine Companions for Independence. The dogs are known as facility dogs, and such dogs can assist with physical therapy, provide companionship, and just the physical contact they provide can help diffuse difficult situations. Though there are only a few dogs at present, like Harve and Lou, they are meeting with great success and are very popular with students, staff, and parents.
Finally, in Bangalore, India, free dog training classes are currently on offer. The Bangalore Canine Club will offer the free sessions until early December, and then in mid-December there will be an all-breeds championship dog show. Owners are being shown how to show their dogs to the best effect, how to stand them, and how to get them moving well. An important element is also just socialising the dogs to one another.
And that's all from us on the Dogcast Radio News Desk. And don't forget that on the Dogcast Radio website you can find links to the news items we've talked about. Goodbye.
I am joy in a woolly coat, come to dance into your life to make you laugh. Julie Church.
For a long time, I've thought we needed a book that tells people what it's really like to have a dog. All the realistic bits that don't always get mentioned. Not just that they shed hair, but that they can make smells of certain varieties, and sometimes have disgusting habits. We finally have that book. It does cover all the lovely bits of having a dog, but it is honest. It's called The About.com Guide to Owning a Dog, and it's written by Krista Mifflin. First, I wanted to know a little about Krista's background and what led her to write the book.
You know, I've been a dog lover all my life. Mm-hmm. I wasn't allowed to have dogs when I was a kid because my mother has bad allergies, and so did I. So I just kind of, as soon as I moved out, I got my first dog. I made a horrible mess of things, but he forgave me anyway.
Mm-hmm. What breed was he?
He was just a mixed breed. Bit of husky, bit of lab.
Yeah.
Bit of German Shepherd.
Yeah.
Pretty much everything.
Yeah,
I probably made every mistake I could possibly make with him.
That's most people's experience with the first dog, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
You are the guide to dogs on the About.com network, is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, so how did you get to be that?
Well, I was part of an internet forum. It's like the site has been around for years, but it's had different guides over the past few years.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing this for 5 years.
Hmm.
But it came about that they were looking for somebody to write for the website, and I was part of the big chat group that was on the site to begin with.
Hmm.
So I just kind of said, well, okay, I'm gonna send in an article and see what they think.
Mm.
So that's pretty much it. It's been really much more encompassing than I ever thought it would be.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess in between the first dog and the not getting it right and the becoming the guide on about.com, you've sort of gone on a journey in between those two, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
I was like your typical person with the dog. You know, I have a dog. Yeah, you know, I love my dog, but he's not, you know, he's a dog, right?
Mm.
And then I got another dog. And you know how sometimes you get a dog that's, I don't know how to explain it. I call them heart dogs, right?
Mm.
They're the ones that just kind of, you know, wake you up as a person.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, before it's like, yeah, dog, big deal, right? It's a pet. And then you get a dog that, this dog has a personality.
Mm.
He's something. And they just kind of do that whole, make you look at them completely differently.
Yeah.
Well, that's,
yeah.
My dog Lokai did that.
Mm. Yeah.
And he was a mess. So he's actually what got me into researching different things, dog health problems, training, all that kind of thing, because he was a mess.
Yeah, yeah.
He had epilepsy, which really kind of threw me for a loop the first time he had a seizure. So everything just kind of spiraled from there.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you obviously did tons and tons of research, because you've ended up writing the About.com guide to owning a dog. How did the book come about?
Well, I was approached by the publishing company, and they asked if I would be interested in writing a book. And I kind of was, had a silly thought in my head and said, oh, why not? How hard could it be, right? It was not that easy.
It sounds like a good idea, and then you kind of go, hang on, I've got to write this now.
Yeah, exactly. It looked really good, you know, on the board, but then it's getting right down to it was very harrowing.
Yes, yeah. Well, I mean, it is a fantastic guide. It says on the front, from sit and stay to positive play, a complete canine manual. It is a very interesting book to read, because you can sit down and read, you know, just read as in sit and read it, or you can sort of dip into it. And what I found really useful was all the website links that you put into the book.
Oh, yeah. I spent a lot of time on the internet. I'm kind of embarrassed to admit that.
But I think that's, in the modern world, that's a lot of people, you know, you hit a problem with your dog, and your first thing is you turn to the internet, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Not too many people have a good store and dog books kicking around. So, yeah, the internet's usually the first place people look nowadays.
Yeah. Okay. Can we look at a couple of your chapters in greater detail?
Sure.
Okie dokie. Okay, if we look at chapter one, because I think this is a really important, you know, people don't always think through what do they actually want from a dog. So can you tell us sort of some of the things that are in chapter one, which is what are you looking for in a dog?
Well, I do think that it's really important that you have to figure out what you want when you get your dog, before you actually get a dog.
Mm.
Like right now, I would love to have another dog, but I don't want a psychotic energy hound that I have right now. I don't want another one of those. And he's not so bad. He's 8 now, so he's really settled down. But I mean, next time I think I'm going to look for something a little more sedate, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I don't really want a big jogging partner. I want somebody that's going to lay around the house with me a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, knowing that, it knocks a whole bunch of breeds off my potential list already. And then there's the whole, I'm not a little dog fan.
Mm-hmm.
I like big dogs. So there goes another bunch of dog breeds that I'm just probably not going to look at.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to like what they look like, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm really fond of big black dogs, and I'm not fond of long hair.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, you have to kind of picture yourself in the future with this dog that you're going to have.
Yeah.
But that's hard to do when, you know, you think new dog, puppy, do I want the whole puppy experience all over again? Because a lot of puppies are the same. They want to play. They get into trouble. So do you want an adult dog or a puppy? I don't know. You just have to kind of think about how you expect you're going to live with this dog after.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, you cover a lot in that chapter because, as you say, you sort of... even things like, how active are you? I mean, one of the biggest mistakes, I think, is people think border collies, they're intelligent, we'll go out and get a border collie. And they don't actually think they're intelligent.
Oh, yes. But
yeah.
They're crazy.
Yes. And, you know, another point you make is consider not just you, but the whole family, the whole context within which this dog is going to live.
Yeah. See, my husband wants a poodle. No. I don't have anything against poodles. They're not my kind of dog. So
yeah.
We're going to have to find some kind of a middle ground here.
Yeah.
Because if I get a dog he's not going to like, he's going to regret ever saying yes.
Yeah.
And if we get a dog that I don't like, then there's also going to be friction.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's very important to take in the fact that, you know, you live with other adults in the house and everybody has to share the same living space.
Mm-hmm.
Or kids.
Yes. And I think as well, you know, not only do you have to do your homework there and sort of make sure that you're getting a breed that is going to be tolerant, you've got to educate your children, haven't you, as well?
Absolutely. And it is not just the dog, it is the kids. You must educate the kids as well.
Yeah.
Your dog can be extremely tolerant and, you know, put up with everything, but he shouldn't have to. You know, every dog deserves to live a life without having his fur pulled, his feet stepped on, you know, his ears tugged.
Yeah.
So it's extremely important to make sure that your kids are taught to respect animals.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely. So we've looked at now the beginning, if you like, of bringing the dog into your life. And hopefully at that point, you know, you're thinking, oh, it's all going to go great and this is going to be great. And I've thought it through, know what I'm doing. I've got the dog that I really want. But it's not always plain sailing, is it? And there's another chapter that I think is a very necessary and useful chapter. And that's chapter 12, which is called Big Problems.
Oh, yeah. I think every dog has the potential to be big problems.
Yeah, yeah.
Like to have a big problem. It doesn't, whether it's health or whether it's, you know, their behavior or whether it's somebody else's behavior towards your dog that causes the problem. No owner is exempt. Not even me.
Yeah.
Especially not me.
Yeah. Now, you deal with sort of things that, I mean, some of these things are nightmare scenarios. I mean, the first one is she bit somebody. You know, so can you tell us a bit about what's in the book, and you know, and that she bit somebody?
Well, the first thing is you have to understand is that every dog can bite.
Mm.
Given the right set or the wrong set of circumstances, actually, every dog probably will bite.
Mm.
As a responsible dog owner, we have to make sure that our dogs aren't put in that kind of position.
Yeah.
And we have to make sure that our dogs know how to behave in stressful situations to minimize, you know, the bite probability. If your dog bites somebody, you have to be prepared as a responsible dog owner to do the right thing and figure out what the right thing would be.
Mm.
Really, but it's much better if, you know, you don't let your dog get put into a position to bite in the first place.
Yeah, yeah. So be, sort of be aware of your dog's triggers kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I know that my big dog is afraid of strange men.
Mm.
So I'm not going to let him be put in a position where he's got nowhere to go if he's surrounded by strange men.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he would bite, but I'm not going to base his life on that assumption.
No.
So this is what it comes down to.
Mm. Now,
you owe your dog.
Absolutely.
Keep him out of.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you've got to be a responsible owner. You know, you decided to get the dog. Ultimately, the buck stops with you. You know,
yeah.
That's the thing, isn't it? Now, there's a huge area in this, the big problems, and I guess this is one of the biggest problems a dog owner can face, and that is you've got, it's called this dog has to go. You know, you've made the decision, okay, it's come to a head for whatever reason, we can't keep this dog. And that's, a really, really vital piece of information for people, because people, you know, there's lots of emotion going on, there's guilt. So what's the advice for, you know, if you have to rehome the dog?
Well, the first step is to make sure you actually really have to. There's no question about it. If you don't like the dog anymore, then, you know, you can't keep a dog in a hostile environment either.
Mm.
So your best bet is to, if your dog's a purebred, you can see if there are breed rescues available that will take him in. You can try and rehome the dog yourself, advertise, ask for an adoption fee, because you don't have to accept money, but if people know that you're giving away a free dog, usually there could be less than scrupulous people that would want to adopt your dog.
Mm.
The worst thing, I think, is if you know you really can't rehome your dog.
Mm.
And you don't have any other choice. Like, there are animal shelters, but they're usually full.
Mm.
If you don't have somebody you know and trust to take your dog, then what do you do?
Mm. And do you have an answer for that one?
I do, but I can tell you it's not going to be very popular.
Mm.
I will tell you that I'm down to two dogs now.
Hmm.
We had a Beauceron.
Hmm.
And he was severely dysplastic. He had very severe hip dysplasia. He's had it his whole life.
Hmm.
And we made the choice last February to have him euthanized.
Hmm.
So that obviously is a very last
ditch
solution.
Yeah. Was that because of his quality of life?
Yes, and he had already had surgery.
Mm.
We had operated on the one side,
mm.
and it was an excruciatingly long and painful recovery.
Yeah,
for him and his, and it. You know what? It gained him. We operated on him when he was two,
mm.
and it got him 4 years.
Yeah.
When he hit the six-year-old mark, his other hip started to deteriorate more.
Mm.
And he started getting, not mean, but his personal space widened.
Mm. Mm.
You know, some dogs like to have a nice big buffer around them.
Yeah.
And Raiders got very large.
Mm.
To where he didn't like people in the same room.
Yeah.
And if you got close to him, he would snap.
Yeah.
This was obviously a health problem.
Yes.
And we took him to a vet and we talked about surgery on him again. Except he'd been removed from the acceptable risk category to a potentially dangerous risk.
Yeah.
So in February last year, we made the choice and we had euthanized.
Yeah. Which, as you say, it's a very, very difficult decision.
It was excruciatingly hard.
Yes. You know, it is something, as you say, it is a last resort. But at times, you've got to make that decision, haven't you?
Yes. The rescues we contacted were not willing to take him in. And, well, even if they had, his quality of life had gone down so fast.
Yeah. I think that's the key thing, isn't it? If you're just buying time for more pain, then is that, you know, it's got to be the right decision for the dog.
Yeah. And I do question myself all the time. Did I do the right thing? Would he really have bit somebody?
Mm.
But I couldn't take that kind of choice.
No.
I couldn't take that risk.
No.
And I feel like a giant hypocrite because of it, but...
No. I mean, I think... I understand what you're saying. I mean, for example, in our family, my mother had a German Shepherd who was diagnosed with cancer. And they said, you know, he's at this point, he has cancer. We can't, you know, exactly say how much pain he's in. But, you know, he's going to get... you know, exactly how you've described, he's going to get to the point where, you know, he won't want you to touch him, he won't want you to be near him, his disposition may suffer, you know, and Mum made the decision that at that point, you know, we all said goodbye to him and he went, you know, he was euthanized at home while he was still, you know, he hadn't deteriorated too far, he still had a good quality of life. Now, some people would argue, you know, you can keep them going on and on and on, but he was a big German Shepherd. If he had been in such pain that he had bitten, you know, or turned in any way, that shouldn't be your final memory, should it?
No. And that was what we had decided, was that, you know, he'll go out as a loved pet.
Yes.
And he went out as my pampered baby.
Yes.
And not somebody's attack.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. I mean, it feels very much, when you make that decision, it does feel like a betrayal.
Yeah.
But... you know, if that is the only decision that is, you know, if it's in the dog's best interest, although that sounds weird, but, you know, that is the ultimate responsibility. And you can't shy away from that. You can't not do that because of, you know, of fear.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you do cover a huge amount in this book. I mean, I'm just looking at some of the titles. You don't shy away from the realities of life with a dog. For example, we have intestinal gas and diarrhea. We have anal sacs and urine issues. You know, this is life with a dog, because you can't get away from the fact that you know, they do make smells and they do drool.
Dogs
and, you know,
are gross. Dogs are gross.
Yes.
That's, you know, and we have to be prepared to live with that.
Yeah. Yeah. What was your what was your favorite bit of writing in the book? You know, what sort of subject was really good to write?
Oh, honest, it was the first one. What are you looking for in a dog? Because, like I said, I've been thinking about getting a dog. Well, no, I like to write about the gross things. I can't help it.
You have to enjoy the gross to live with a dog, don't you?
I do. One of my favorite things to write about is stuff you don't want to read while you're eating.
So, on that note, then, this book should come with a warning, should it? Don't read this while you're eating.
Yeah. You know, things you don't discuss at the dinner table. Picking through your dog's poo to see if he ate those.
Yeah.
Like those or not. It's not my favorite part of dog ownership, but it is fun to write about.
Yes. it's a very realistic book. I think it's got tons of information for people, and it's got those links to other websites that they can go and find out more. But I guess don't read it over dinner.
Yeah, pretty much. Or stick to the easy chapters, you know, dog training, stuff like that.
Yes. Well, Krista, it's been an education talking to you. Well,
thank you very much.
It's a great book. And if you like surfing the net, you can find lots of useful links too. And there's a useful link on our site where you can find out more about the about.com guide to owning a dog.
Any man with money to make the purchase can become a dog's owner, but no man, spending ever so much coin and food and tact in the effort, may become a dog's master without the consent of the dog. Do you get the difference? And he whom a dog once unreservedly accepts as master is forever that dog's god. Albert Payson Terhune.
Bernard Cartwright is the author of The Knock Nobbler, which chronicles his experiences as a dog warden in Worcester in the UK. Today, Bernard reads an extract from his book, revealing some more of the colourful characters his job brought him into contact with, some older, some younger.
One day, while driving down a country lane, I pulled up very sharply in front of a moth-eaten whippet, which looked like a starving fox, just standing there alone in the middle of the road. Then up from behind a hedge surfaced a brawny man with a face like a bulldog chewing a beer, and doing up the front of what appeared to me to be an old Montague Burton suit. This action tended to restrict his momentum, giving me time to assess the situation and lock myself in my van. While he was making order of his attire, Mr. Naval Hazy started to shape up to me and then bellowed out, like Ian Paisley trying to call time in a Dublin pub on St. Patrick's Day. "You vile man, I suppose you am on piece work for them in Farrier House." The scrawny whippet, alarmed at this original self-expression, through shock more than literary appreciation, ran off. Now a drunk with three fields of vision, trying to get his coordinates on top of a ditch, is as wobbly as a perjured chain of evidence. So when the critical mass of his bulk seemed to be over the point of his most unstable equilibrium, I wound my window down and said, "I'm going to arrest you for being drunk in charge of a whippet." This threat to his intoxicated ego, linked to his posture, meant that as a result of the laws of gravity, the city council will not have to cut back that hedge for a year or two or six or seven. And as he fell, I heard him utter a word which I have never heard before for that particular type of hedge. Later on, as I patrolled a play in St. John's, the St. John's district of Worcester, I saw some children, about eight of them, around some swings. They were toddlers, holidaying in the sun. All partners in grime they were, and curious about my van, which I called Pixie. To get to know them, I gave out some no-fouling stickers, the sort I put on lampposts, and these were taken home as presents to display to parents and to siblings and neighbours. When the assembly got together again and had settled, they started to ask me if I had any puppies in the cage, and I said I didn't. Then the following dialogue took place. Here, why do you kill dogs? I catch them to keep them from getting killed on the roads or from causing accidents, and I really like to take dogs back to their own homes. Oh, why doesn't the Queen have a proper dog like my dad's? Well, the Corgi is a proper dog, if a rare breed, and the Queen likes them. My brother took his pants down and did a poo under that bush. Is that right? No, he should really go home to the toilet. Hey, why don't I get enough pocket money? Why do dogs have big teeth? Well, they have big teeth because they're meat eaters. Why does dog poo have worms in it? Dog poo is poisonous and can be dangerous, especially to the eyes. This conversation came to an end with the little boy saying, "Here, thanks for these stickers, mister. Can you come back tomorrow, because I like you?"
I've seen a look in dog's eyes, a quickly vanishing look of amazed contempt, and I am convinced that basically dogs think humans are nuts. John Steinbeck.
Putting Dogcast together involves searching the net for items of interest, and I came across a gem recently. It's called Dog Walking Unleashes Angst, and it's by Cam Fuller. This fella obviously knows the ins and outs of life with dogs, and many parts. For example, trying to get your enthusiastic dogs out of the house quietly first thing in the morning while everyone else sleeps rang very true for me. This is written by a dog person with humour, which I think has to accompany dog ownership. Another article I came across was a serious one, but one that may well be of help to you if you've recently lost your dog. It tells how losing a dog is like losing a member of the family, the fallout that creates, and that there is still a future to look forward to. That was going to be the end of the show, but I came across an appeal in Beverly Cuddy's blog that I couldn't ignore. Anne runs a small rehoming centre in Wales, and she rescues about 2 dogs a week from death row. Anne has been diagnosed with a critical illness and is appealing for someone to carry on her work. It's a story that really makes you stop and think. Beverly's blog is the Cold Wet Nose blog, and we've put a link on the site to it. Anne, we wish you all the best. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315 849 2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121 288 0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
What's furry, has 4 legs and a trunk? A dog going on holiday.